Okay. So now, your turn. You can talk about that or whatever else you want to bring up.
I actually have a question that relates to two things you were saying before. I've been trying to look at the self-cherishing mind a little, and I actually did think of it as sort of like a kid in class that acts up. And, you know, like you were saying, sometimes with those students, it's just sort of like listening to it, and, you know, it sort of goes away on its own. But with the self-cherishing mind, I feel like a lot of these vices just sort of like bash you over the head, and, you know, like, so I don't know,
Okay, so you're saying with a student that's acting out, if you listen to them, you'll calm down. But should we really listen to our self-cherishing mind, or should we just clobber it?
Well, right. I mean, yeah.
Okay. I think here's where you need to develop some finesse in your practice, okay? Because sometimes, what I've done sometimes, is I've had this little role play, okay? It's this little role play I do where, you know, I put self-centered mind over here and then kind of Dharma me over here. I'm kind of sitting in the middle on the, you know, And I say, okay, self-centered mind, you know, you're whining and you're complaining and you're acting out. What's really the problem? Okay, and then I try and really listen to my heart with what self-centered mind is doing, and then sometimes self-centered mind is like, oh, for example, oh, nobody loves me, you know, everybody's ignoring me, everybody else has a best friend, nobody cares about me, I'm so isolated from everybody else, da 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 da, and then. To say, okay, I really hear you, self-centered mind. You know, you're really miserable. Okay, let's look at some of the things that you're saying, okay? You're saying nobody loves you. Is that really true? Is that really true that nobody loves you? Okay, so you kind of listen compassionately to self-centered mind, and oh yeah, you're really miserable. You know, and you're suffering so much, but is it really true that nobody loves you? Is that really true? And then, you know, and then you go back into the role play of being self-centered mind, and you start investigating, well, is it really true that nobody loves me? Well, no, that's not completely true. There are people who love me. Well, I want more love than they're giving me. And then you go back into, oh, I really hear you. You really want more love than they're giving you. What do you think could make that come about? And then you go back and, you know, you kind of ask self-cherishing mind, is demanding love going to be the thing that makes them love you more? Is that going to help? You know, what's going to help improve these relationships? And then you go back into and you role play self-centered mind again, you know, and you think about it. You think, well, yeah, I've been carrying on and accusing everybody of not loving me enough and whining, and that really hasn't done any good, has it? You know? I wonder how these other people feel about me. I wonder how I could be more lovable. Oh, maybe I could start caring about them. Oh, what a novel idea. Maybe I could start caring about them. So you do this kind of little role play, but you really, when you are self-centered thought, you really get into that role, you know, and you really let self-centered thought put out its whole story. But then, you know, it's like, you know, we've all done role play and, you know, improv and stuff like that. And so you play both the roles, and then you just kind of, you sympathize with your self-centered mind, but, you know, say, is what you're thinking true? And, you know, is your tactic for getting what you want really going to work? Has it worked in the past? Yeah? So sometimes it's, you know, if you have that kind of discussion with yourself, it gives you some space to just kind of understand yourself and say, oh yeah, poor self-cherishing mind, you really are miserable, you really are hurting, You know? So sometimes, you know, when you have that dialogue, role play the two things, it can be very helpful. Yeah? Then, and then here's why I said there needs to be some finesse in your practice. Because there's other times when self-centered mind comes up where you just absolutely need to turn around and cooperate. You know? It's like napkin. You don't have a discussion with it. You pull it out by the roots.
Like when you were... I can't remember the exact thing you said, but like when you were getting into bed that one time and you were like, oh, I can't take this pain anymore.
Right.
And then you're just like...
You just have to go, no, I can't take it.
Right.
Yeah? Yeah. So there's other times where you just need to completely, I'm not going there, you know? But I think napweed's a really good example. Isn't it? Questions, comments? What's happening with everybody?
It's the honeymoon is definitely over.
The honeymoon's over, huh?
Yeah, and it was. I was talking to myself this morning after the second session of meditation, saying, "Well, Nance, let's see, a whole week here, and I think you've probably gone through the entire sadhana." Uninterrupted, or at least slightly, from beginning to end, maybe six times the entire week in all the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some days where the gong went off, and I was like, reverently, I prostrated my body, speech, and mind. I had disappeared into some discursive thinking or a lists for sperm time after the retreat is over, or the disturbing attitudes that are just sort of making their way around to everybody in the retreat, you know, just pulling up whatever one, and taking me away from the sadhana, where I just could, I mean, not even, one day I didn't have refuge for an hour and 15 minutes, and I would pull myself back, and I was gone before I knew it. Now, one of the things I have to say, which is very, very different this year than last year, is that I'm not beating myself up about it. And because I'm not beating myself up about it, because what I'm finding out is that the beating up and the self-hate ends up tightening the screws even more on with the mind that's already out of control and wandering around samsara, and it's not staying with Chenrezig at all.
Mm-hmm.
And by me not doing it this year, it's amazing that even with all that discursive thinking and the disturbing attitudes and the lists and my senses driving me all around too. I'm too cold, I'm too hot, it's no good with that sound. I mean, my senses just driving me everywhere is that I still have a lot more space in my mind this year than I did last year.
Good.
So now I'm figuring out is that it's the judge and the jury and the dictator who comes in and beats you up after you've been, you know, wandering around that makes things even worse. And then you can't handle it. You can't deal with it. So I'm not quite sure. I've been using the antidotes. I've been trying to work with those. I'm not quite sure as far as the list thing, and you know, getting off on this little tangent, just going in my mind, all just obsessing about why.
Well, we should compare lists. I'm sure Dan has one too.
So, I'm not quite sure. Do I just kind of hang in with this? Is this sort of a phase? I mean, the space is there. I'm actually having quite a bit of joy in my mind, despite the fact that I'm so frustrated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think just seeing how you're not beating yourself up, that's tremendous progress. I mean, that's really totally different than what happened before. And you can see that it does give a lot of space. What I think with the list is go and write it all down. You know, because I'm sure, isn't everybody making a list? Isn't everybody making a list of what you're going to do after retreat? Yeah? Oh, this is a good one. Okay, tomorrow, everybody take out black felt pens and write down all your lists of what you're going to do, and we'll hang them around you, okay? No, seriously. And have blank paper, blank space at the bottom, so when you think of new ones, you can come and write it down. Yeah, because I'm sure everybody is making a list, aren't you? You know, of what you want to do after retreat, what you're going to do, what you're going to buy, where you're going to go, who you're going to talk to, what letters you're going to write. Okay, so let's write it all down. We'll just put it on the wall. And when you think of a new one, you can go at it. You know? And if you get tired of your list, you can go read somebody else's. You know, and see what they're planning on doing. Okay? Okay?
We have some really good pieces of paper too.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. We have those big ones. I don't know if we have enough space on the wall for all the big ones. Maybe we should cut them in half or something. Long-wise, you have long things, okay? And just have your list and... Okay?
So what is the afflictive emotion on discursive thinking? Is there an antidote to discursive rather than keep bringing the mind back?
Well, they say for just discursive, just distraction like that, you know, doing breathing meditation, you know, you need some single-pointedness at that point. I think sometimes just really saying the mantra and letting yourself sink into the vibration of the mantra can have that same thing, you know. Okay, just too much going on with the visualization. Just pay attention to the sound of the mantra. Focus on the sound of the mantra. Sink, you know. Because I don't know about you, can you see that there's like various levels of energy, you know? Mm-hmm. And especially the list writing planning one, it's like it's up a notch. Mm-hmm. And it's like it's almost as if your voice is up a notch. And when you get really into the mantra, it's like, and it's like you can feel the energy even go lower in your body, you know, kind of settle down and your voice gets lower and, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite everything that's going on, it's really, really exciting.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I really have a question, but I thought I would tell you what I've been doing.
Uh-huh. Good.
It feels like for the first month, oftentimes, like, I'm kind of like in this boat, and I'm out on the ocean, and I'm just waiting for the next disturbing attitude to come in, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like, sometimes I'm, like, maneuvering and doing, you know, it comes in, and it's like different storms are coming, and some are easy, and some are like, sometimes I'm maneuvering it, and sometimes I'm using the door, and sometimes I'm thinking and popping back right now. And then it's calm, and I do some Dharma reading, and then the next one comes in. But it always felt like there was this boat, you know? And I've been dealing with my body for, like, the first month. It was just like... And then it just started driving me absolutely crazy. And in fact, I'm used to kind of dealing with pain, but I realized that I was having excessive fear. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was intensified. It wasn't... I mean, like, I didn't really need it. But it was kind of like... It just felt out of control. In my body, I didn't, like, there was a week where I just never knew what was going to happen, and then it kind of settled down, and then I was, like, kind of nerved out about any little thing that could turn into something, you know. So then I kind of, okay, I can deal with that, it's the body. But then, the last couple of days, until this morning, things were too tight. And so, I didn't sleep well, this and that. So finally this morning, I took a page out of your book. And because I kind of, that boat image had come, but I'd always kind of pushed it aside. Mm-hmm. So this morning I just played with it, and I realized there was no boat left. I was just kind of out there in the ocean. And so I just kind of went with it, you know, free form. Sometimes in my meditation I do it kind of structured, and sometimes I just go free form and kind of let it happen. This was totally free form, but I went with the images because images helped me. And I kind of just gave up my body completely. Mm-hmm. It was very nice, actually. Mm-hmm. I really felt like it was a possible thing, at least in one moment of time, to actually to just completely give it up, because it's really the accommodation for, you know, problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt like, but you know, like your mind is still there. So, because I'm always saying to myself, like, what am I clinging to?
Mm-hmm.
That thought comes up to me a lot, and I'm not, you know, kind of not going so well. But I didn't really follow that one along. It felt a little bit like a practice for dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It made me think about asking you, like, I mean, I don't know that I have a question, but I was thinking about dying, like, because you're going to have to give up your body.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it also seems like you're going to have to give up your mind.
Yep. You got to give everything up. We're giving up everything when we die. But I think this whole thing about it sounds like you've been fighting with your body.
Well, you know, I realize more in the fall that I get quite angry at it, and I've been a little better about that.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was fear, actually, and I realized that later today, like. Because what made me kind of nervous is I've had like a few times, it's happened like 3 times where I was like experiencing things that I didn't really know what they were.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't comfortable. In fact, today I was thinking, geez, if I'm not so mentally sound, maybe I could have a psychic break. So, I guess part of the session, I'm totally fine. I come in, everything fine, that way, check out. Because I didn't really know what the experiences were. They were, and I kind of figured it out.
They were mental experiences or physical ones?
Mental.
Uh-huh.
And I finally figured it out, it's sometimes I walk up the meadow when it's dark,
mm-hmm.
and I make myself walk into the woods,
mm-hmm.
and I'm fearful. And I do it just because I actually, there's really not anything to fear, and I know that, but I have fear, so I just kind of do it. And that's how I figured out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so used to. I didn't really know what it was when it was happening, and it helped to label it. I felt a lot better.
Mm-hmm. So is it fear of your body, or fear of the future, or fear?
Well,
of
it was easier to see the fear when I was. I could watch my little stories of how I figure out what I'm going to do if my body goes this way or that way. When I was kind of know what was going to happen with it. So that I could kind of, that was okay. But when it came to my mind. It was like, that was uncomfortable.
Mm.
I didn't really know what
like
I
what's
was,
gonna
what,
happen.
Yeah, what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
And it helped a lot when I labeled it today. Because you talk about this sometimes of anxiety, and I don't think I have that a lot of times. And I definitely used to tell myself that I don't feel fear very much, except for the unknown. So when I was able to think about walking up to the meadow and what that mm-hmm. felt like, and I was able to label that, the whole thing just kind of settled out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because very often we are anxious, but we aren't aware of it. Or we think, I'm not an anxious person. And then we look and we're quite anxious.
Yeah.
You know, there is a lot of fear, there is a lot of worry. And so it's true sometimes just labeling it is very, very good. Helps to calm the mind down.
Yeah.
Well, there's fear again.
And the thing that was nice, actually, was when I was floating out there on the ocean.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
I felt very, I had this sense of protection, actually. I feel like that Dharma and the Sangha and the Buddha, that was that's what was so calming.
Yeah. And a refuge is an incredible protection like that. And especially when your mind feels a little bit weird or whatever, mm-hmm. you have unusual mental experiences, coming back to bodhicitta, or coming back to refuge is very, very important at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like we were talking about when people have nightmares or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. they just take refuge. So whenever mm-hmm. there's some kind of mental experience that you're not sure what it is, it's very helpful to take refuge. But use this as just as a way to study what goes on in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then sometimes I think it very helpful when I find, like I remember get a few, this retreat or last retreat, and last retreat maybe, because I had never thought of myself as an anxious person. Probably everybody's going to laugh, ha ha ha, children, you know, everybody else knows I am, but I think I'm not. And then I go, oh gee, there's some anxiety there, you know, and you know, and it was very interesting kind of discovering that, and then doing taking and giving meditation with it. And then I think for anxiety, what I think works very well, and I was doing this in relationship to my leg and the, you know, pain I was having, is I just had a determination every time, because sometimes I would just get this shooting pain like out of nowhere, and I was like, okay, every time it hurts, I'm going to say that's good. Yeah? And just like train myself, okay, every time it hurts, I'm going to say that's good. That's negative karma being used up, you know? Or like every time I don't get what I want, you know, I'm pushing and pushing and trying to control things and it's not going the way I want. And every time I don't get what I want, I'm going to say it's good. So we usually forget, you know, but if you kind of keep reminding yourself, yeah, every time, you know, people say something I don't want to hear, oh, that's good. Yeah, because we say that's bad, but why is it bad? Why not label it good? Why do we label it bad? Why can't it be good? You know, something hurts. Why can't that be good? Who says it can't be good? Yeah. The things I have it in the way I want to. Good. It's good. Self-centeredness is gonna not get its way. It's good.
Yeah. Now, do you remember that last week I told you that I was very obsessed with trying to find my eyes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yesterday morning I was thinking that when I did my first meditation about mind, really, there was something that possessed that body and the mind. So suddenly I realized that I am not my body and I am not my brain. So I just begin to think in another way, you know? I'm not my body, I'm not my brain. So I was thinking that maybe I was confusing my brain with my mind at first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, well, how my brain works? Wow, okay, my brain is like a computer, the hardware. And the mind is like the software, no? Well, I have this kind of brain, so that's why I'd be allowed to have thoughts, to the mental factors, and blah, 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 blah. And the software is the mind. But then there was an observer that was watching the relationship between the mind, the software, and the hardware. Through the karma, how I get engaged and involved with the situations and blah, 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 blah. But yesterday, I found another observer that was watching another observer. So I have observer number one or two watching the hardware.
Oh,
software.
Tomorrow there will come a third one and a fourth one.
Yeah. So I had a sense that if I continue looking, I'm going to find that a lot of observers, such as, let's say, observers.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, wow, in my mind, it's like a dependent arising. There is a mind, but I will never find it. So I realized that I was looking to that mind like a concrete thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I will never find it like this. So I just give up that I will never hold the mind. I will never say, this is the final observer. No. I feel like it was like a dependent arising. And I'll be changing. And I will never... There is a mind, but there isn't.
Okay. This relates very much to what Tom was saying last week. You know, about like there's these decisions, but who in the world is deciding? Okay? It's like there's a retreat going on. Yeah? Where's the retreat? Is there somebody running the retreat? what's the retreat? Or your workplace, yeah? There's all these people working together. Is there one person in charge that makes everything happen in the whole thing? No. I mean, there's this retreat going on. Is there one person like in charge of the whole thing? And what in the world is this retreat? We can't find anything, but it's all happening, isn't it? Yeah? The retreat's happening, things are going along, this and that happens, and decisions are made, and everything, and there's some big thing doing it? No?
And then you saw the magic of that.
Mm-hmm.
So relief. Mm-hmm. Relief. Wow, it's like I dropped my obsession.
Yeah.
And really do feel like free.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to explain myself. Mm-hmm. But it's a pretty incredible sense of feeling that. Even I tried to find something, but I know I'm going to try the best. So, continue. So I don't know who's going to be born. I don't know nothing, but I don't care.
And that's okay.
Yeah, I do.
That's okay. It's like, you know, okay, there's no boat, but okay, instead of sitting there in the water and flailing, I'm just going to float. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
Now that you mentioned about saying good when something bad happens, I would like to share the 12th and the 3rd session. They were referring to the ceiling.
The
ceiling of
the
roof.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting to find out something. At the beginning I thought, well, okay, there's the heating on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
And I get like hooked to the sound and let's do it. I cannot fight with it. But the thing that came up to my mind later when I got used to and the walking on the roof,
mm-hmm.
and everything was like I was trying to work out with the problem I had for a long time. With the repairing of the ceiling and my working in the problem, I found out that if I suffered about this problem, all the things I suffered is because I have done something before.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come up just like,
yeah, randomly,
really, or by chance. So that's one point. So I thought, if I suffer, life is not punishing me, like God says.
Mm-hmm.
You are the sinner. You are going to be punished.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that's another thought I shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So why I suffer is because I did something. But how to focus this thing? I thought, if it's not a punishment, then it's something that comes up to repair my negative karma or the things I've done, to give me the chance and remind me that
mm-hmm.
it's time with this hitting on me. And the pain of the hitting
uh-huh.
on my body and my emotions. And
uh-huh.
it's time to remind me I can repair something I did before.
Yeah.
So I thought that negative karma is really a very, very good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very good when you really suffer to get the opportunity of taking advantage of that suffering to say, this is it, I can have it now.
Yep.
So I thought, if I remember always that when you have to repair something, there's pain, or there's
mm-hmm.
heat, or there's something to be done
mm-hmm.
to repair, and I remember the feeling of the
electricity,
then it's an image and sound that
right.
can help me or
right.
somebody.
Very good. Very
that is
good.
Something that can help.
Yes.
Because I'm not the sinner, I'm not guilty, but I did something I have to repair.
Yeah.
And then I
yeah.
can work on it.
Right. Right. Very
so,
good.
So it was a very interesting session.
Yeah.
The hour and 15 minutes. how the mind is like finding out things and working with them. And at least for me, that session, that could be, my God, how they think in preparing the ceiling at this time when people is meditating, you know? That was one of the sessions that I came out with a teaching. And it's very interesting because I went out when I found out that, and I wanted to see the people repairing the ceiling. They weren't there when I went out.
Well,
it's interesting that I didn't meet them.
And
I didn't see them, but it's, so it's, I wanted to share this because for me, it's, the negative karma is a teacher. And it's the opportunity that is given your life at that moment with the pain to remind you. You did something, and now if you want, you can repair it. This pain is reminding you. If not, okay, go for the next one.
It's reminding you it's time to repair it, and it's time in the future not to do it again.
Yes, because I thought if you don't do it, then we live in the world of conditioning. To become a condition. Conditioning again. And then you're going again for the next relationship and do the same thing because you didn't repair it. And then you get the opportunity of the karma, cropping up. It becomes, if you don't take the opportunity, then you can have the conditionment later. And that's going to be more difficult because get the condition, and when the karma drops up and the pain comes, you say, I'm this pain. And I've been in this pain for many, many, many years. Well, you say we are slow learners.
But it sounds like you just learned something very important. That's good. Very good.
That's interesting.
Good. Yeah.
Similar for saying good and things don't go your way. So for me, I have a pattern of resentment coming up, and I'm just starting to recognize when it does arise. And so I guess the answer is patience. But how to stop it from arising? Because I feel like, okay, it's another situation, it's the same resentment coming up.
Like things aren't going the way you want them to go, and then you get resentful, and then
classic. And I need to get done certain things in certain amounts of time, and when it doesn't happen or someone interrupts, it's resentment, and so I'm always in the situation.
And
now I'm seeing it, but I'm not seeing like
how to get out of it.
This is a pattern in my life happening. I can't stop it. I can stop it in terms of permanent silence. I don't say anything. But I can stop it. I can't stop it. I can observe it after it happens. But where do you cut it off?
Okay. So there's this pattern of you have an idea of what you want to get done in a certain amount of time. It doesn't happen for whatever reason. And then, and especially if somebody comes in and interrupts you, and you have to pay attention to something else, and then getting resentful. What I find, because I have that happen too, is to train myself to say, good, I'm glad I didn't get everything done. Good. And just, you know, it's like, this is samsara. Of course I didn't get everything done I wanted to. You know, this is samsara. Of course things didn't go my way. What in the world did I expect? Well, I expected everything to happen according to my schedule and turn out the way I wanted. And it's just like, oh, you know, time to laugh at myself again. Because, you know, a mess up in samsara. Imagine that. How unusual. You know, here I am ranting and raving because there was a mess up. And it's like, my goodness, I should expect these things. In fact, it's kind of amazing that they don't happen more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole culture around a good day is when those things get done. A bad day is when they
don't. Yeah. And it's just like this memory of, oh yeah, of course, it's samsara. Of course things aren't going to get done the way I want. You know?
So I can use that. I can say to you, so it's
I'm going to have to go. Oh, no, it's not. It's not a good hug. Then I have to say to myself, oh, it's samsara. Then we'll have to say to all the other people who are bugging both of us, oh, it's samsara. Sorry, you can get that. Yeah. But it's good that you're noticing this as a habit, yeah, you know, and a pattern, because those kinds of things can be so poisonous, yeah, you know, when they go on for a long time.
What I find, as Tim is bringing this up, is that there's that moment where that comes up so simultaneously, and then there's the storyline, mm-hmm, that has,
yeah,
been saying that for, mm-hmm, so long.
Oh,
you've got, I've got it memorized. What, the jealousy comes up, feeling excluded, left out, and then the holster and the whole justification. So to reframe it so that we can start talking to ourselves differently.
Yeah.
You know, because I was thinking about this. There's a hook, there's a juice, mm-hmm, in that resentment. There's a hook in the juice in that jealousy.
Yeah.
That's almost like something that I go for. It's like a hit.
Yeah.
In a negative sort of way.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That disturbing, yep, attitudes have got a buzz on, mm-hmm, that I'm hooked into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why? Because we feel, when a disturbing attitude comes up, there's a very strong feeling of I. So what we're getting out of it is, I'm here. You know, there's resentment, there's jealousy, there's frustration. I'm here. So it's, yeah, it is like this hit of, you know, do something.
So this thing about getting so much space because of this mind quieting, I think, and kind of working with our afflictions, and it seems like for me a lot of, since I've calmed down some and there is more space, then the mind is kind of searching for what to put in there, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's the and so to keep focused on kind of what to do with that, I just been saying to myself, just stay in the stillness.
Right. Yeah, because there's kind of an addiction to thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, there's space in my mind. Oh, better fill it up with thinking about something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, yeah, just, you know, stay in that stillness. Or if you put something into it, put, you know, just the vibration of Om Mani Padme Hum. Yeah, or just kind of that feeling of compassion, that still feeling of compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there very much is this whole addiction to thinking.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't think, something is wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, what am I forgetting?
Yeah.
Something needs to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I should be making use of my mind.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that kind of spaciousness that starts to come up, that is going towards the more natural state of the mind when it's unadulterated by,
yeah,
all this thinking and all this projection.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What an unusual experience is.
Yeah.
It is somewhat disconcerting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That reminds me of, I have a brother, he's always on the go, and he would call me at Camp Oahu. Every weekend, and say, so what do you got going this weekend? Always. You know, or in the middle
of the week,
so what's going on?
I always
just see nothing.
The sun came up.
What's so funny is because he always wanted something, you know?
Yeah.
And I just got used to saying, there's nothing going on that's any different than that yesterday. So that's how you call it.
Something new, something exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
that's when we start picking fights.
Yeah.
You know, when the space starts to happen, it's amazing how my mind will go to somebody and pick a fight in my mind with the behavior of that person for the day.
I don't know how to make this question very clear, but I'm going to try. As we work with the sadhana, we can enter to the problems through many doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's necessary to find out for many different ways to fix the problem. But I was thinking, like, is there any way to try and find out how to go more directly to the roots of the problem, instead of, okay, we're working with this little side or with this little problem, or the way I thought that they
look at how the eye appears to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, look at how the eye exists.
Appears to exist.
Yeah, how it's appearing, and if it exists that way. Who else has questions?
Yeah, it's so common. I write one letter, and he answered me, and his letter for me is very strong.
Yes.
Because he answered with absolute sincerity.
Yeah.
And I didn't wait this kind of answer, of response. So for me, it's not easy to continue this interchange, because he is very, very open, very sincere. And there are some parts of the letter that I would like to, or maybe all the letter that I would like to share with you. If you want, I can put in some place and you can read. And one of the things that I would like to comment with him is that in the base of our experience, the motivation, the situations that it doesn't matter if we are in the prison or outside the prison, in the things that mejor me traduces, no puedo. Que él describe en su carta algunas experiencias que lo llevaron a encontrar el Dharma, y es bien interesante que, a pesar de que él ha estado la mitad de su vida en la cárcel, la historia que relata curiosamente es en algunos puntos muy parecida a la mía, y y los motivos que a él lo llevaron a buscar un camino de desarrollo espiritual en algunos aspectos son muy parecidos al mío, y pues yo nunca he estado, por lo menos por estas razones, tanto tiempo en la cárcel, ¿no?
He has been half of his life he has been in prison, and that he's been describing the reasons why he sought for a spiritual path. And she says that many of those reasons are the same reasons she had for looking for a spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
But the strange thing is that she in no way has been in danger of going to jail. But I mean, even though the experiences are in a way common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can see the letter, and
I want to say you thank you very much, because when this kind of interchange, we really can put our experience in a more deeper, in a deeper context.
Mm-hmm.
Not also we think sometimes that all the people is in our situation, and if we look at the world, this is a very, very extreme, rare situation, no? Rare condition,
mm-hmm.
to be
mm-hmm.
teachers, to be books, to be this
mm-hmm.
kind of places, to be time, to be all the conditions exactly for our practice. Like if we were kings, no? I feel that, like a queen of the Dharma, no? we eat, I eat better food, I cannot to find in the in the place, no?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very, very good experience.
It's very touching, and he is very just he's just right there, you know, not trying to cover anything or hide or justify, or just right there. And I think it's really a call to respond with that same kind of thing of just, yeah, this is what I'm thinking, or this is what my experience is, or yeah. I mean, you'll see the tone and
mm-hmm.
how he wrote it. It's very beautiful.
I was thinking about that today, like, when we read our prayer for our meal, we had an opportunity to make these offerings.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking about, why are we so complacent? Why does our mind go there? I mean, if we thought
mm-hmm.
about, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, this happens all the time, you know, like somebody injures their leg and they can't walk well and they have to use crutches. Then they notice all the people with crutches. But until that they have those crutches, they never do. I've seen this so many times. Our brain, we're just set up that way somehow. And I feel that way about, like, this life, you know. Like, we have to, okay, you have to do a lot of work to build this cabin, right? Okay, fine. We recognize that. But we don't seem to recognize how much work we have to do to get this precious human life. I mean, we need to do a lot, and we just take it for granted. We can say this prayer all day. I've been thinking about so many people I've met in hospitals and different places. Like what you were saying the very first day, these people, they couldn't say the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many people out there, they're humans, but they don't have full brains. They're riding around on carts. They're in fur crafts. I don't know if you've ever been there. You know, and I was like, I'm amazed how much we take for granted. I mean, I do it all the time. Until you have an injury, you don't worry about your toe until you have this. You know, I was like, we just almost, unless we think about things, we just are going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very much this thing of taking things for granted and looking at what we don't have
mm-hmm.
and complaining about that. But, you know, I pick up on that line in the food offering prayer, too. You know, may we always have the opportunity to make offerings to the Triple Gem. And it's true, we take that so much for granted, the opportunity to offer food. I mean, it's such a small thing, we just kind of run through the prayer spaced out. But to have the opportunity to have food and then to know the Dharma so that we can offer the food, just that simple thing, which we do how many times, you know, already took the accumulation of so much good karma just to get that opportunity whereby we can offer our food before we eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, like you said, just looking at everything that we have, you know, because it's true, like, it's very easy to come here and say, oh, I'm working so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's like, how much did we have to do to have the opportunity to be able to come here and work? Because the work you do here is for the Triple Gem. It's not ordinary work. It's work for the Triple Gem. It's work sustaining the Dharma. It's work helping, you know, other people progress along the path, and just having that opportunity, you know, to work at the Abbey, let alone to meditate and participate in the program, that alone took a lot of good karma. And how much we take that for granted and then say, oh, I'm working too hard, I don't want to work, somebody else can do it or whatever.
Because we're like the turtle.
Yeah.
Came up through the ring.
Yeah.
But it is difficult to, when we suffer about something very strongly, we, in that moment, we can be have empathy for the people who suffer that problem.
And see, that's the thing, that we get so much into our own suffering. Like you said, we can't have empathy for anybody else. And it's precisely at that moment that we need to catch ourselves and say, I'm not the only one. And open our eyes and look and see what's going on in this planet. And then we'll see, wow, my suffering is nothing. My suffering is actually quite manageable. It's like nothing. Yeah, I'm not living in Baghdad right now. I mean, just whatever it is, or, you know, whatever situation you can imagine. Or, I mean, that's the whole meditation on precious human life. I'm not born in the hell realms. I mean, just seeing that our suffering is actually quite manageable. It's not so bad.
On the other side of the coin of that, to let in all the suffering there is, I was trying to think the other day in a session about how to let that in, but not feel so pained or overwhelmed, kind of a mess. And I was trying to think what were the afflictions of that. So would that be attachment? Too much attachment? When the thing that went on for me is in the session there was a fly by me that was dying, and I really started and tried to kind of pay attention to that and look at it, and then I started crying, and then I felt so overwhelmed. And so I was trying to think how to have that compassion but not feel so done in.
Yeah. So how to have compassion without feeling overwhelmed by it. Yeah. I think the thing is with how bodhisattvas keep their optimism is that they always see that compassion, that suffering has causes, and the causes can be eliminated. Okay? So, you know, it's like you can see the pain of the fly when it's dying, you know, and that was created by causes, and there's nothing you can do right now to stop that. But, you know, you can make a karmic connection with that fly and make prayers to be able to teach it in the Dharma, teach it the Dharma in future lives. So you can teach it so then it won't create the causes for this, and instead it will create the causes for liberation and enlightenment.
And then I also thought after it really was dead, that, and I was still in such pain with it, then I said that's just the body, it's not there now. So I kind of took it to the, you know, that its consciousness was leaving.
Yeah, and its consciousness had left.
Yeah.
We, of course, don't know where it was born, if it was born in a better place or worse place. That's why it's good to do prayers for it and say mantras so it can hear and blow on it and stuff like that.
Not a bad place to die, but it's in the meditation heart. All
right.
The prayers we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's a great place to die if you're a fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, but make that connection so that you can be of benefit to that living being in the future. Yeah, and we don't know where it was reborn, if it's happier or if it's in more suffering, we don't know. Yeah, but the thing is, whatever suffering it was experiencing is impermanent. Yeah, it's changing, changing, changing. And so, I mean, that's what I tell the kiddies sometimes, you know, like when time comes for them to die, just to let go. And the important thing is to have that positive motivation. Because whatever suffering you're experiencing doesn't last for very long. It's just momentary. It's gone, 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 gone. And you hearing that, guys? Now generate a good motivation. Because that carries you through and makes some good outcome come.